Beautiful, beautiful song. You can go ahead and open up in your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 17. We'll get there in just a moment. As always, good to be back. Normally, don't seem like I get to come twice in one year. So this is definitely a blessing, say the very least. For you that don't know what he was talking about, Scott, a couple of years ago, probably been 4 years now, but I showed up one morning. I was asked to share my ministry, what I do, what it consists of. And so I sat down up here, and Scott came, sat down beside me, and we start talking, and I said, "Well, I'm looking around." I said, "Well, who's preaching this morning?" He said, "Well, you are." I said, "Well, I was asked to share my ministry, what I do." He goes, "No, you're preaching," and I said, "Well, forgive me if I don't participate in the music this morning because I got some work to do, but it all worked out." But I tell you what, I go prepared everywhere now, so it doesn't. That was a lesson learned, say the very least. Chase, that's scary. My boy Chase is here this morning playing the drums. I'm telling you, I've known this kid. I think kid. Known him for years, and boy cracks me up, always has, funny boy, and he used to come to our house actually years ago. It's been a while now, but he used to come to our ministry, so it's good to see you, Chase. I am kidding, joking around with you, but I do love him to death and his parents. Just tell you a little bit about what we do, because a few months ago I was here and I actually shared a little bit more in depth about this, but things have changed a little bit for me. I worked with Campus Crusade for years, I've traveled the world, had a lot of experience here in Chattanooga in particular at UTC and Chattanooga State, as well as lots of different campuses around the United States. But something I noticed probably 3 or 4 years ago was that, there's a lot of successful campus ministries. A lot of successful. Our ministry at UTC did very well. We ran 350, 400 college students a week there. There's a lot of successful college ministries, but local churches struggle when it comes to college-age ministries. All of them do. I don't know really any around here except those maybe on the campus of UTC that do very well. And so my heart really went out for just college students. So my wife and I have been working with students for 10 years now. We've always had a ministry in our home. And so I started sitting down with a lot of local pastors and talking to them. And every single person I sat down with was on board with what we were doing. And so now throughout the weeks, we meet with a lot of students from different churches. We do discipleship training. We do Bible studies with them. But then also on Sunday afternoons, we have what we call our weekly meeting. And so we have a lot of students in it. Man, I'm telling you, we officially started this in August. So think about this. And it has grown so much. It's far reached beyond just the Soddy Daisy area. We have a lot of churches that participate here. But we are having churches now, students from Concord down in East Brainerd. Woodland Park sends some students there. And we have some students from Bayside Baptist, out 58 Highway. And I talked to one of them the other day, and I said, "How in the world are you, how did you find out about this? I mean, this is mainly geared around, the Soddy Daisy area." And she said, "Well, Lifeway promotes it." And I said, "Lifeway?" She said, "Yeah." She said, "There's several people there that know what you're doing, said something's going on for college students in Soddy Daisy, and so they send them your direction." And so it is a good problem, but it's a problem because we don't have the space whatsoever for what's showing up now. We're having 35, 40 college students that come on a regular basis, and if they all ever showed up at the same time, we wouldn't have room for them. Fortunately, they're sporadic here and there. So God is truly, truly blessing, but again, a lot going on for us. Still at Chattanooga State, I still spend at least a day a week there. Got Bible studies and things that are going on, and so that's been a blessing as well. I'm taking some students with me down to Panama, Central America, here in the 1st of January, and we're going to be taking Bible literature and things out into the jungle, doing a little camping out. These guys think that they're outdoorsmen. They hadn't seen nothing like what they're about to get to experience. It's smoking hot, 100 degrees, and sleeping under nets. It's definitely an adventure, but it's rewarding at the same time, to say the very least. So if you would, just keep us in your prayers next summer. We've actually got about 2 spots left for this. We're taking some students out to Nebraska or Montana, one for 2 weeks. I don't know which one, but we're going to be working on an Indian reservation there, doing some Bible studies and things with students and with kids. And so right now we've still got 2 slots left open, I believe. Probably won't have that for long. But just, if you would, just be praying for us. So much going on, I couldn't even begin to, I don't have enough time to go into the details. But just ask that you would just continue and pray for us. 1 Samuel chapter 17. One thing I need to say, yesterday was a fantastic day if you're friends with me on Facebook. My little 9-year-old killed 2 deer. First time he'd ever been on a juvenile hunt, and I'm telling you, I'm a big deer hunter. I've killed a lot of deer in my life. Derek and I, we go way back. And so I've killed lots of deer in my lifetime, but I'm telling you what, I almost jumped out of the tree stand when he shot the first one. And then the second one came through and he shot it. It about killed me. So it was absolutely an exciting day yesterday for the Ferguson household. 1 Samuel chapter 17. We're going to cover so many verses this morning, there's no way to read everything. So I'm going to read just a few verses in just a moment to get us started. But we're going to look at the life of David and maybe even some things you've never thought of, I hope. I hope I challenge you in some way in the from the life of David. David would burst onto the scene here in 1 Samuel chapter 17. David, his father Jesse, kept him pretty much out in the fields, working with sheep, shepherd. Yet his brothers were out on the battlefield fighting. And so David would make trips back and forth just as a boy now. He's a boy. Back and forth to the battlefield, taking supplies, checking on his brothers, see what's happening in their lives. And so on this one particular day, David would show up to the battlefield and hear in the distance this man by the name of Goliath, who's not only cursing the people of God, but he's also cursing God. And David, for the life of him, cannot figure out why they're allowing him to do something like this. And so he starts questioning, and his brothers end up telling him, "You go back home, tend to your sheep. We'll take care of this." And yet David would ignore the advice that he was given and makes it pretty clear, "Hey, I'll fight this guy. I can handle this." And next thing you know, you find David in front of Saul. Saul had no volunteers, so even a child he's willing to at least listen to. And he is reluctant at first, but eventually he gives in and says, "Sure." And he tries to put his armor on David. It's so big and bulky, he can't even. David's like, "I don't need this. You know, you keep it. I've fought bears and lions with my hands and clubs. I can take care of Goliath." And if you know the story, he would go out and approach Goliath, and Goliath is actually offended by it. Can't believe they would send a kid to do a man's job. And he says, "You send a boy out here like I'm a dog, like I'm a pet, family pet or something. You know, you send a kid." And so he tells David, "You know, I'm going to cut you to shreds, feed your flesh to the bones." I want you to listen here, 1 Samuel chapter 17. Again, we're just going to read a couple of verses to start off, but I want you to see, this is so important as we go on, that you see the heart of David here in the beginning as a child. I want you to see the heart of David. Verse chapter 17, verse 45. "Then David said to the Philistine, 'You come to me with a sword, with a spear, with a javelin, armies of Israel whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all of this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So it was when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Then David put his hand in his bag, took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine in his forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword, drew it out of his sheath, and killed him and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. And if you know the rest of the story from there, actually the armies would chase after the Philistines and destroy each and every one of them. But the thing I want you to see here, pretty simple, easy, okay? I want you to see the faith, the trust, the love that David has for God at this point in his life. He is willing as a boy, now you think about 12, 13-year-old boys, what we're talking about here, willing to go and fight an entire army along with a giant with nothing more than a slingshot and five smooth stones. This gives you an idea of the faith and the trust that this young boy would have in God. Amazing, to say the very least. I mean, the Bible says when he saw the armies in Goliath, he ran to them. No fear whatsoever. Hits him in the only place on his body that could cause any damage that's not covered by a shield or protection. Knocks him to the ground, takes his sword from him, cuts his head off, takes the head to Saul. All right, so here's what I want you to understand first of all. From the choices and the decisions that David makes here for God, because of his love for God, because of the choices and decisions he makes, there will be a lot of consequences, a lot of difficulties that will arise because of anger, animosity. And so Saul would set out to kill David. And for the next several weeks, months, years, David would live in some cases like an animal, living in caves, trying to escape and run, save his life from Saul. Yet when you study the next few chapters, up to about chapter 30, 31, what you find as you go through there is a young boy growing and maturing and walking with God. I'm talking his relationship with God is out of this world. You can say even the Old Testament, truly Spirit-led, as he is running for his life. So here's what I want you to see. When he has nothing, he's running from God, solely dependent on God, brave, willing to fight an army and a giant with a slingshot and a stone. Right? Life's tough. His choices have brought a lot of consequences and problems. But his relationship with God, good. Real good. Following Jesus. Here's what you need to understand. Something I've come to figure out even in the last couple of years for my life. If you want to walk with God, you got to understand it will be difficult. Life's not going to get easy, contrary to what some of our buddies on television will say. Life doesn't get easy if you truly seek to walk and follow God. Yet, through these difficulties, your faith grows. James says that in James chapter 1. When your faith's tested, you build endurance. You learn for the future. Here's how I'm going to get through these things in the future. Discomfort is very much a part of the Christian faith. When you genuinely decide to follow God and you say, when I say this to you, I'm talking heart, mind, body, and soul, I'm going to follow Christ. God promised your life's going to be difficult. I mean, that's what Jesus told his disciples. Broad is the way that leads to destruction. Many's going to take this path because it's really easy. Just go with the flow. But then he said, narrow is the way that leads to life. And how did he describe it? Difficult. You follow this path in life, it will be difficult. And yet so many seem to have this idea that they can go into this relationship with God with like clauses in the contract or something. Like, you know, a lot of people have this warped view of following Christ that it revolves around, here's my plan. Now, God, if you want to join in, feel free. But I've got a job. Here's the reason I've gone to school. Here's the trade I've... Here's what I'm doing. You want to join in, feel free. And yet when you study the scriptures, unfortunately, that's not what you see. You see Jesus approaching fishermen and doctors and accountants and saying, follow me. And they dropped what they were doing and they would follow Christ. And so when you make the choice, you have to realize, like David, there will be difficulties. Guaranteed. As a matter of fact, I tell college students all the time, if you're not seeing any difficulties in your life because of your walk with God, if you're not seeing any inconvenience, discomfort, problems because of your following Christ, you need to question, who exactly are you following? Because he said, if you follow me, there will be difficulties. Unfortunately, guys, now here's where I'm going to start stepping on some toes. Might even lose some friends this morning, but unfortunately, growing up in the culture that we've been brought up in, we've been taught to run from inconvenience. We've been taught to run from discomfort and difficulties when really, as followers of Christ, it's where we should be going to. I mean, we really should be running towards situations that are stressful, inconvenient, difficult, suffering, towards those who are sick, hurt, lost, persecuted. I hope we all here realize that Christians throughout the centuries, they are the ones that created hospitals. We are the ones that created nursing homes and the Red Cross and orphanages and food banks and the Union Gospel Mission dealing with homeless people downtown. I mean, we're the ones, we're the crazy ones that when things happened around the world and most people were running, we're the ones meeting them head on going to the problem. And that's the reason that the Bible says we're supposed to be weird, peculiar people. Yet unfortunately, however, it doesn't seem to be the norm in the church in America at all. Oftentimes we are convenient driven, comfort driven. And it is sad. And I believe one of the reasons why we're like this can be found here in the story of David. David's life's been wonderful so far, but you're going to see a lot of similarities, I think. I hope, anyway. I hope you see this like I have from these verses. When you jump over, and you don't have to turn there again for the sake of time, but 1 Samuel chapter 31 around verse 6, something happens here. Saul would die in battle. Saul would be killed. As a result, guess what? Pressure lets up on David. Everything slows down. Now, Saul's men are still in control. They're not really that concerned with David. For the next 7 years, life changes for David. And after 7 years, he actually becomes king. Now, I want you to listen to what I'm saying. This is when everything goes downhill for him. Everything starts falling off. Now, David would put his own men into cabinet positions there of power. David would reestablish the altar covenant sacrifice. He would bring the Ark of the Covenant back to Jerusalem. And you may be sitting there thinking, what's bad about all of this stuff? Well, life got civilized for David real quickly. And suddenly you find this young man trading in his sandals for a chariot. Traded in that cave he was hiding out in for a really nice palace. You find a young man that would trade in his passion for God for his own personal glory. David starts enjoying the comforts of being king. It's a sad story. With the convenience and the safety and the security and the ease and the comfort, his whole life changes. Matter of fact, eventually he has multiple wives. David would stop leading his men into battle. He no longer did that. And that was unheard of in that day and time. Any respectable king would never send their men somewhere they would themselves would not go. That's the reason Saul died in battle. No longer, not David. He's got a guy by the name of Joab does that for him. He don't do that anymore. And why? Fear. And you'd say, well, fear of what? He's got too much to lose. He's got a nice house, clothes, chariots, food, servants. No way I'm going to dare risk losing my stuff. No possible way to follow this God, this once man of God that would dare to stand before Goliath, an entire army of Philistines. He has lost his zeal and his passion for God. John would say he's lost his first love. Why? Comfort, security, convenience, safety. Who needs God? Why do I need to rely on God when I've got everything I could possibly want? Let me tell you something. That's the way it works. David here, he has tasted the finer things of life, and he says, it's good. I like it. I really like it. Let me show you one other thing that came with this that would destroy David's life. Idleness. A lot of free time. Ladies, in case you don't know this, men don't do well when we've got a lot of free time. When our minds have time to just wander, we go places we should never go in life. That's not to say we don't need breaks, but when we have too much time to just think, we go places we should never go. And that's what you find in the life of David, because it wasn't long after this. He's standing on the balcony one day, nothing to do, watching a girl taking a bath, would call and have her brought back to his place. And most likely he forced her to do this. She had no choice with him being king. Caesar taking a bath, has her brought to the palace. Understand, her husband Uriah is off at war, which is where David was supposed to be, fighting. He's got free time, just hanging out. He would sleep with this woman. She would become pregnant. As a result, he would have her husband killed in battle. Here's what I want you to see from all this. We're going to change directions here, guys. His children would do everything he did. Do y'all realize that? Amon would rape his half-sister Tamar. In retaliation, Absalom would kill his brother Amon. Just study the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon would do everything his dad would do 100 times over. He would try it all. He would always come back and say it's meaningless. It's like chasing the wind. But he tried everything, like father, like son. The kids imitated what they saw, what they had heard of their dad doing. They imitated everything. I don't want you to forget something now. I said this a few minutes ago. David had brought back the Ark of the Covenant. David has reestablished the blood sacrifices. He's going through the motion, guys. He's going through the motions. But unfortunately, our actions speak louder than words, don't they? His children, they see right through the meaningless, ritualistic, traditional, mindless religion that David is participating in. And if we're not careful, we fall in the same category. We fall into this exact same situation. I'm not talking about rape and murder. I'm just talking about religion. Mindless religion. A lot of us have been brought up in it. A lot of us now are bringing up our children in the same mindless, ritualistic, traditional religion. And they're not falling for it. Oftentimes, as a result, they leave. They rebel. Because what they see is not real. I mean, in all honesty, for a lot of churches, for a lot of Christians, we have been brought up to believe, particularly here in the South, real Christianity is you pray before you eat, don't drink, curse, or smoke, give some money in the offering plate, and show up to church. And God's in heaven going, well done, good and faithful servant. You've done fantastic. Yet there's more to it. Kids see it. Kids watching, they're seeing it. In all reality, there's not a lot of difference between us and our lost neighbors that are on their way to hell. I mean, we got the same goals, same dreams. We want the same stuff. We just go to church. And the kids, they watch these things. It's like, that's not what I see. And it is so sad. We have tasted comfort and ease, security and safety, and we've said, it's good, I like it. I enjoy this life. I like it. And so we produce kids. Many kids that have been brought up in our culture today, in our church culture, thinking that Christianity is pretty much go through school, don't get into a lot of trouble, show respect to your elders, go to college, get a degree, get a job making a lot of money so you can maybe either move into a gated community somewhere or move out away from everybody where you're safe. Get a wife, kids, enjoy yourself. Go to church. I had a parent, and this is a true story now. A couple of years ago, I had a parent that called me. Her son's about 22, 23 years of age. He had a girlfriend broke up with him. Devastated, you know. Man, I hear about this every week, okay? Guys, girls breaking up. Golly, it's just always drama. And so this girl, this boy, he's devastated. The mom, she said, I don't know what to do. He's starting to dabble in the party life over here, you know. And will you just talk to him? So I did. I started talking to this guy, and we actually start meeting on a weekly basis. And about 4 or 5 months down the road, I'm talking God gets a hold of this guy. I mean, radical change takes place. His Clark Kent stepping into a phone booth, coming out, Superman type radical event that takes place in this guy's life. And his whole perspective on life changes. His goals, his ideas about life, everything starts to change. The next summer, he goes to this place that I recommended for him to go over in a very hostile part of the world towards Christians. And he spent 6 weeks there trying to start Bible studies. The next summer after he graduated, he would sign up for a year to go to this place. Came back for a summer, goes back for another year. And on that second little tour he was on, I saw his mom at the Walmart one day. Here's what she said. In a very funny yet serious manner, she told me, if I'd have known 3 or 4 years ago my son talking to you would have him in a hostile part of the world trying to start Bible studies with people that hate him, I'd have never recommended he come. Now, two things there. Number one, I wish I had people telling me that every week. That'd thrill me to death. If I had parents coming up saying that to me, because their kids are getting it. But here's what this lady was saying in her own way, okay? Here's what she was saying. I had a plan for my child. All I wanted him to do is graduate from college and make a lot of money, live in a nice, safe area somewhere where he'd have a wife and kids, and I get to see his grandkids on my grandchildren on church on Sunday morning. And in a sense, what she's saying is, you or God, one, you screwed up my plan. That's the idea. You messed my plan up. And we wonder why kids rebel. So many kids in the churches, they walk away. College students, they're gone. It's because they start watching. They're watching parents. Parents that have no zeal, no passion for Christ whatsoever. They just go through the motions. And whether we realize it or not, the example we give them is much like David, much like the rich man. He came to Jesus. I want to follow you. And Jesus, at the very end, Jesus said, oh, okay, well, go sell all of your possessions, give your money to the poor, and you come on back, I'll be waiting. And in a sense, what Jesus was saying was, you get rid of all your idols. That's what he was saying. You can't serve God and man. Choose this day whom you will serve. You can't have two masters. That's what he's saying in that. And the Bible says the rich man turned and sad and walked away, much like David, much like many of the people sitting in the church. They turn, they got so much, they turn and they walk away sad. And the kids are watching everything they do. And it's so easy for kids to be able to see what's most important to mom and dad. Now understand something, guys. This is a product of, we're a product of our environment. We've been programmed this comfort, convenient Christianity idea. I have had the privilege, and many of you know this, I've shared stories over the last couple of years of things, but I've had the privilege of sitting in Northwest Africa in a little alley with a handful of converted Muslims on a concrete slab. And right outside, I mean, I'm watching it go on. People are shooting guns and tear gas is going off. And these people are sitting here so intent. I can't even stay focused. I'm teaching and I can't stay focused because of everything that's going around. They don't care. All they want to know is, what's God telling me to do? It's all I care about. I sat at the beginning of this year in China in an underground church there and on an underground ministry on a campus. I sat in a church on a place about the size of this stage in an apartment, packed full of people, and we're singing songs like this for fear. And when you come back home, my wife, she has to, I feel so sorry for her because I see all this stuff, and I know other people don't see these things, but I do. I get to see it, and I come home, and I'm frustrated, and I'm mad. Because over here, it's a joke. It's just a joke. I mean, these people, when they have a baptism, they don't go out to eat afterwards with their family and friends. They live in fear of, I might lose my life because of what I've just done. And I'm telling you, for years, I wanted out of this place. My poor wife, you pray for her, because I come up with some crazy ideas every once in a while. And at one point, I even put in for an international church pastor in Budapest. I just wanted out. I wanted out of this place. I wanted somewhere where it's real. And yet later on, I've come now to realize I myself am running from difficulties. Because this is a difficult place to minister to people. Everybody's heard of Jesus and everybody's got a warped view of Jesus. This is the most difficult place on the planet. Over there, you know a Christian. They don't just nonchalantly say it because it cost them something. Over here, everybody's Christians. Last part here, and I'm going to finish up. I could ramble all day. In 2 Samuel chapter 24, around verse 24, I'm not going to read this again for the sake of time, but David makes another poor choice, poor decision. David, he decides he's going to do a census. He's going to count the soldiers in his army. This is something they never did. The children of Israel never did this because it didn't matter how many people were in their army. So they'd never done this before. Now he would come up with like 1.3 million, that's how many people was in the army. He was advised not to do this because God had promised, you follow me, I'll take care of it. Doesn't really matter. 1.3 million, a kid with a slingshot. Doesn't matter, I'll take care of it. If David would go ahead and do this census, 1.3 million soldiers or so, and God's angry, he's mad, and he decides he's going to punish the people because of the king's choice. So he lets David pick the punishment. It was like 3 years of a famine, 3 months of running from the enemy, or 3 days of a plague. And David's like, give me the 3 days. And 70,000 people would die in that 3-day period of time, and David would find himself grieving and mourning because of his sin and the cost and what it's done. And so David gets this idea, I'm going to go out and buy this piece of land, I'm going to build an altar, and I'm going to offer a sacrifice to God. And when the landowner figures out who's wanting to buy it, he says, no, no, you can have it. Just take it. And David replies, I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God a burnt offering that costs me nothing. I'm going to give sacrificially of my life. If it doesn't cost me anything, I don't want it. I don't want to do it. Costly. I think of Jesus again as he would walk along and look at these onlookers that are saying, we want to follow in Jesus. Say, you better count the cost before you follow me. You have no clue. You truly jump in line behind me, I will lead you to the most difficult, inconvenient, uncomfortable places you could ever dream of. Take up your cross, follow me. That's what he would say. And you have to ask the question, have we ever really done that? God, do with me as you please. I'm yours. I had a couple of weeks ago at my house, college house, one night. I was talking about something crazy like this. And afterwards, I had a kid, 6'5", 255, grab me by the arm, take me to my office. He said, how do you do this? What does it look like? If what you're saying is true, then what I've been taught my whole life is a joke. If it's really about I surrender everything to him, he's mine, I'll follow you wherever you go, then what I've been taught is a joke. What do you have to do? What does it look like? And I told him it's real simple. I tell everybody in this room, real simple. Two things, really. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Start learning to deny self, crucify self. Love God, love your neighbor. We can't possibly imagine where we might end up. We actually did that. But I tell you something else for me as a parent that's even more important. I just can't imagine how much of an impact that might have on our kids as well. If they're actually watching their parents, watching people that solely devoted to God. God, do with me as you please. Do whatever you want. My son, I think some of the greatest things in my life that's had some of the greatest impacts on my life have made the biggest impacts on my kids as well. My little bitty son, Gabriel, the one that killed the deers yesterday, when I went to Africa a few years ago, it messed him up. I mean, we've had to take him for counseling over it because things are getting back of what I'm in, what I'm doing, things that are going on over there. And at the time, he's four or five years old. He can't sleep, and he thinks Dad's not coming back. But now, as the years have gone by, he has asked me several times, why would you do that? Why would you do that? I've been able to tell him. It's where Jesus leads, man. It's where he leads. And he asked me, my 9-year-old asked me, would you let me go somewhere like that? I said, son, I'll have you signed up for one of those. I want you to see it. I want you to see reality. Lost souls going to hell that need Jesus. I want you to see it. But there's just as many right here on this mountain. Guaranteed. Right here on this mountain. People that are in need of Christ. Let's pray. If you would stand to your feet. We'll have the invitation. We'll sing. We'll do one verse. If no one comes, I'll turn it over to, I guess, you, Scott.